from the Strike and Spare Family Fun Center Studio.
Radio has changed our lives, and possibly saved our lives.
Everybody, listen carefully.
This guy gets it.
Radio has changed our lives.
I'm Matt Duchesne of the National Predators.
I'm Roman Yossi of the National Predators.
I'm Ryan Johansson of the National Predators.
I'm Eustace Arros of the National Predators.
I'm Robert Grimaldi of the National Predators.
And you're listening to the Renegades of Puck.
Broadcasting live from the Nashville Sports Radio Studios. And against all better judgment, this is Predneck Nation Radio.
Everybody loves the soldiers until they come home and stop fighting.
The Renegades of Puck are ready to take you on an all skate around the NHL with all the news, highlights, scores, and more.
This is Pete Weber, the Nashville Predator,
and you're listening to the Renegades of Puck with Crazy Charlie.
Welcome to Smashville.
It's time for another episode of Predneck Nation Radio. That's right, it's a Predneck takeover of the Strike and Spare Family Fun Center Studios. I'm your host and captain, Crazy Charlie Saunier. The Renegades of Puck are in the trenches today, and we are recapping the season that just wrapped up for the Nashville Predators as we get ever so closer to finding out exactly when the Preds will be back on the ice for Game 1 against the Carolina Hurricanes. Mastrodamus will join me in the second period. Chauncey Smith in the third period. Brian Baston will bring you one big stat to wrap up the show before we head on out of here. Again, you can always interact with this show by going to Twitter at Renegades of Puck. We would appreciate if you would give us a follow there and help us spread those links. Pass the word around. Everybody knows a Renegade or three, so go ahead and make sure that they know they have a home here in the trenches with the Renegades of Puck. It's hockey coverage nonstop Monday through Friday. If it's 5 o'clock on your clock, the Renegades of Puck are on the radio right here on Nashville Sports Radio. So we would appreciate if you would help us get the word out there to each and every one of those Renegades, especially this time of year. As playoff madness begins to set in, I expect we'll have a whole new level of listenership with us being on Monday through Friday, with us being in the trenches at 5 o'clock on the clock. I expect we will have new listenership at a level that we have never had before. 2017 was certainly the biggest boost that we have ever seen in listenership. And I anticipate right now, with everybody catching playoff madness, we will have a bunch of great new Renegades of Puck in the trenches with us here on Nashville Sports Radio. Support this radio station who's gone out there on that limb and given you the coverage that you've asked for the last 20 plus years. Hockey coverage on the mainstream during the day, during drive times, 5 a.m., 5 p.m. doesn't make a difference. The Renegades of Puck will go where the mic time is, but this radio station has supported us for over 10 years now, over 500 plus episodes, and now giving us the trust to go out there and handle the business and deliver the goods when it comes to all things Nashville Predators and NHL hockey coverage. So support this radio station. Do that by going to social media, Twitter at Nash Sports Radio, Facebook, of course, Nashville Sports Radio, and you can always go to WNSR.com. You can stream the show completely live for free right there, but you can also get information about what's coming up on the radio station, information about each and every one of the shows here on the radio station, and of course the Predneck Nation link will take you to more information about this radio show, including the brand new photo that's been posted of me wearing the Captain C of the Renegades of Puck Rebirth hockey jersey that's recently been put out. Fabulous work, you guys. By the way, look at those jerseys, look at those drop-offs going all over the place. I'll mention a little bit more about that here coming up in just a few minutes. So WNSR.com is definitely the best way to go ahead and get this radio show and to get all the information about this radio station. The WNSR app is also completely free for you to download so that you can take the show with you anywhere in the universe. And we sure do appreciate each and every one of you for taking the time, investing in us, and listening. Once we get you in the trenches, you're not going to want to leave. You're free to come and go as you feel fit, but you're not going to want to go because you found the best hockey coverage on the radio and you have found the most entertaining radio crew that you could possibly find right here on Predneck Nation Radio. So support WNSR, support Predneck Nation Radio, support the Renegades of Puck. Your Nashville Predators have just wrapped up a 56-game shortened NHL schedule and they finished with a record of 31-23-2. That is good for 64 points. Fourth place in Central Division is a playoff qualifying position. So the Nashville Predators are the number 4 seed in the Central Division. And
and will take on the division winner and number one seed in the Central Division, the Carolina Hurricanes. After 56 games, finished with a record of 36-12-8, good for 80 points, 16 points ahead of the Nashville Predators. The Florida Panthers finished in second place with a record of 37-14-5, that is good for 79 points, and the Tampa Bay Lightning finished with a record of 36-17-3, 75 points overall. That's your top four in the Central Division, and those four teams are your playoff teams. 1-4, 2-3, the Florida Panthers being the home ice advantage in the 2-3 series that's coming up. Going down below the playoff cutoff line, just to wrap up the season in the Central Division, the Dallas Stars did finish in fifth place, 4 points behind the Nashville Predators. Yes, it was a close race until the final week of the season, but the Nashville Predators ultimately with a 4-point separation here at the end of the season ahead of the Dallas Stars. Chicago Blackhawks finished next in the standings with 55 points, and then you see the Detroit Red Wings and the Columbus Blue Jackets each with 48 points. Detroit holding the tiebreaker, so Columbus finishes in last place. The Columbus Blue Jackets have already parted ways with their head coach, John Tortorella. For the Nashville Predators, it's the seventh consecutive playoff appearance, and of course they will face off against the number one seed Carolina Hurricanes. Still start times, days to be determined. We're getting early indications that it could possibly be Sunday or Monday for game one for the Nashville Predators on the road. And for the Preds going up against the Carolina Hurricanes this season, a record of 2-5-1, that's 5 out of 16 points. They were outscored 24-17, and we will get into breaking down game one of that series and spending an extensive amount of time on the breakdown and the preview for game one starting tomorrow morning right here on Predneck Nation Radio, starting at 5 a.m. Jump in the trenches with the Renegades of Puck. It's 5 o'clock on your clock. Doesn't matter if that's a.m. or p.m. The Renegades of Puck are in the trenches and on the radio here at Nashville Sports Radio. So that lays out where the division finished after this shortened season. By the way, the team with the most home wins in the division were the Tampa Bay Lightning, record of 21-7. The team with the most road wins in the division were the Florida Panthers with 17, a record overall of 17-9-2. So that lays out the division goals for. 189 was the most amongst the playoff teams. That's the Florida Panthers, 181, Tampa Bay, 179, the Carolina Hurricanes, and then the Nashville Predators, 156. We'll spend a bunch of time going back and recapping this season series when it comes to the Nashville Predators and the Carolina Hurricanes. We will also discuss extensively everything the Nashville Predators are going to need to do to break down and beat this Carolina Hurricanes team coming up. Very much looking forward to the schedule release and schedule announcement coming out here in the next couple of days. Injury report for the Nashville Predators, of course, that's been a massive story throughout the season. We saw the rise of many of the Chicago Wolves, and if you remember that scenario for this season, the Milwaukee Admirals opted to not play, so the Nashville Predators had to find an affiliate to split, and that happened to be with the Carolina Hurricanes in Chicago of the Chicago Wolves. So we need to get updated on everything going on with the injury report, but definitely, we saw plenty of youth, plenty of progress in the prospect system coming up this season and making a difference for this Nashville Predators team. How many of them will get the opportunity? Some of them have earned their spots on this roster moving forward. Tanner Janot, absolutely going to be in the lineup. Olivier, I'd like to see him back there on the lineup. Trennan, of course, is going to be out there as part of the Stampede line moving forward. So we have seen some of the youth, some of the prospects now not only get into the lineup, but solidify their positions. And we've also gotten a glimpse into what the future is going to look like for this Nashville Predators team. We'll go over all the team-wide concepts here in just a couple of minutes. Mastrodamus in the second period, Chauncey Smith in the third, Brian Baston in the overtime session right there. For the Preds, the season numbers wrapped up like this. Goals for on the season, 2.70, ranked 21st in the NHL. Their goals against, 2.75, is 12th in the NHL. Shots against, 31.3, that's 24th in the NHL. Shots for at 30 is 14th in the league. Special teams, not that impressive this season. 24th overall in the NHL on the power play, converting 28 out of 159 times, or 17.6%, and the penalty kill. 42 power play goals against was not the most in the NHL, but it was very close to it, and they were near the bottom of the league in power play goals against the entire season, and they were near the bottom of the league in the penalty kill most of the season. 29th is where they finish in the league ranking. Penalty kill by percentage, 75.4%. And again, statistically, the Nashville Predators do not match up very well against this Carolina Hurricanes team, but it is not about going out to center ice and dropping the stats and dropping the roster and declaring a winner. It is about playing a full 60, going to all the hard areas and scoring all of those significantly greasy goals. Taking a look inside the statistics for the Nashville Predators to wrap up the season, it was your captain, Roman Josi, that led the team in scoring after 48 games skated, 8 goals and 25 assists for 33 points, 14 of those 33 points coming on the power play. Philip Forsberg at one point this season pacing at a point per game, even over a point per game. But unfortunately, injury and inconsistency here down the stretch. 39 games skated, 12 goals, 20 assists. That's good for 32 points on the season and finishes second on the Preds in scoring, first amongst the forwards. Kelly Yarncroke, 49 games, 13 goals and 15 assists for 28 points. Mikael Granlund also with 13 goals. He had 27 points. Victor Arvidsson only skated in 50 games this year. 10 goals, 15 assists, 25 assists. And then we see Ekholm at 23. Tolvanen at 22, 11 goals, 11 assists in his 40 games skated this season. And Ryan Johansson, we've seen him pick up his play as of late, that number one overall big body center type of play. But disappointing regular season when it comes to statistics. And of course, Matt Duchene would have to agree with the very same thing, considering most of his goals came in just two games out of the 34 that he skated in this season. But if he's right, he's healthy, and he's ready to go, then this Nashville Predators team could be in for a very big boost coming from Matt Duchene also, and coming from Ryan Johansson, Tolvanen, and Forsberg getting back healthy, getting right. The Nashville Predators offense hopefully is going to start looking very good. They'll have a couple of days to work on their chemistry, get a couple of skates in before the playoffs start, before they head out to Carolina. Of course, the biggest story of the season was the emergence of UC Saros as the franchise starting goaltender. There was most definitely a time early in the season after the first couple of weeks that we were questioning if UC Saros was even going to be a part of this franchise moving forward the remainder of this season. Where his numbers were, simply not getting it done. But we were a little bit ahead of ourselves right there, and the Nashville Predators were willing to exercise their patience. After he gets injured by the Carolina Hurricanes team, the same one that he'll face in the first round of the NHL playoffs, he comes back, and when he came back, absolutely dominant, and dominant to the point where he may receive a Vezina finalist award coming up very soon. I do not believe he's going to win the Vezina, but I do believe he's going to be one of the finalists. 36 games played for UC Saros at the end of the season, a record of 21-11-1, a goals against of 2.28, and a save percentage of .927. If you take out that early couple of weeks of the season, his numbers down the final 25-game stretch of the season were better than, frankly, any other goaltender in the entirety of the NHL, and that's the reason that the Nashville Predators are in the playoffs right here. You just heard me mention the season stats. When you are 21st in goals for and 12th in goals against, it is definitely your goaltender that has made you get into a playoff position. UC Saros has carried this team, and now let's see what UC Saros can do with his first opportunity ever to come in and start a best-of-seven series. Very excited to see that element of his game moving forward. We know what he can do now during the regular season. We saw him get very hot before COVID canceled the end of last season, and now we have seen him be very hot for the last 25-plus games in this season. Pekka Rinne closes the season out after skating 24 times. Record of 10-12-1, a 2.84 goals against average and a .907 save percentage. And you have to go back and think about that road trip. When it was UC Saros that was out injured, it was Pekka Rinne who stepped up and went on a run of games. Probably got overworked and run down just a little bit. That's why it was really good that he had a month off before coming in and having that magnificent finish up to the season on home ice just the other night at Bridgestone Arena. So for Pekka Rinne, as a backup goaltender this season, 10-12-1, 2.84, .907, pretty good right there, and he definitely helped the Nashville Predators stay in there and gave them some of their best games of the season on that road trip from hell, where the Nashville Predators seem to turn things around. Break this into two halves. The first half of the season, the Nashville Predators looked like a team that was about to be broken up. They looked like a general manager that was about to be pushed into retirement, a head coach that was about to be fired. All of your favorite Nashville Predators players were about to be sent off for draft picks and prospects, and we were looking at most certainly a 3 to 5 year rebuild right in front of us at Bridgestone Arena, which would have been incredibly painful. But instead, the schedule flips over to the second half of the season. First game of the second half of the season, the Nashville Predators pick up, which was easily one of their signature wins of the year in Tampa, and then from there, everything turns around. They handled business against the teams that were below them in the standings, and they became more competitive against the teams in the top of the standings. No, the overall records against these teams at the top of the division were not that great, but they were better at the end of the season. 2-5-1 overall against Carolina, 3-5 against Florida, 2-6 against Tampa Bay on the season in the 8-game regular season series, respectively, between the teams. So for the Nashville Predators, they'll have every opportunity now to go up against Carolina. They've got things set up. The first half of the season was a mess. John Hines, his system, the team's identity, the youth has turned things around considerably. The veterans have come back from injuries. They are all performing at a different level than they were before being out or in the first half of the season. And this Nashville Predators team, that's the second half of the season, they are ready to bring hockey trench warfare to virtually anybody out there. A little bit of extra time to stretch things out as the NHL regular season schedule is still working its way through. We had a couple of games last night. We've got a bunch of games on the schedule tonight up there in the North Division. Then Thursday, three more games. Friday, two games. And Sunday, finally, the last game of the regular season. We know that the NHL playoffs will start before the end of the regular season schedule. The NHL playoffs will start on Saturday. But for right now, we're focusing on looking back on the season that was for the Nashville Predators. And then the rest of the week, we will look ahead at Game 1 and beyond for this Nashville Predators team against the Carolina Hurricanes. But for right now, I'm starting to get suspicious that it might be time for a takeover of a takeover.
Live from the WNSR studios, it's time for Mighty Drunks Radio.
There are a bunch of drama queens that spend an hour talking, 20 minutes jumping around while close up.
Time to get the latest on the best beer league team in history. The two-time Stanley Keg champion, Mighty Drunks of Nashville Hockey Club. Here's our host and assistant captain, Crazy Charlie Saulnier.
Welcome in. I am your host and assistant captain, Crazy Charlie Saulnier, number 89 in your program, but number one on the score sheet last night as the Mighty Drunks from Antioch in the Ford Ice Center go back-to-back and win the Stanley Keg Championship, defeating the Alcohooligans 7-4 last night in action on Ford Ice Center ice. The Mighty Drunks fall behind early 1-0 on the first shift of the game, but then it was me going in there and bringing the jam, tying the game up at 1-1. My first ever goal in a Stanley Keg Championship game, only my third ever Stanley Keg playoff goal. Great jam right here. I set up for the one-timer off the post. The rebound comes out. I jam the puck back into the pads of the goaltender. And on the second rebound opportunity, reach right around and tuck that puck into the empty net. Setting the tone, setting the pace for your Mighty Drunks to go on and then add a couple of goals to it. But it would be the Alcohooligans absolutely pushing back hard with a couple of critical offensive zone face-off victories leading to three consecutive goals for the Alcohooligans, including one with just 4 seconds to go in the second period, tying the game at 4-4. The Stanley Keg Championship of the Lower Sea League comes down to the final 12 minutes of action, and it is your Mighty Drunks that are going out there and getting the job done. Jack Porco put some distance between the Drunks and the Alcohooligans there in the third period. Add an empty netter to that. A couple of incredible saves, including one that should make every highlight reel across the hockey networks of the world by Lucky Bolden. A rolling kick save with the pad that gets stick taps and a roar from everybody in attendance. Limited crowd last night at Ford Ice Center, but everybody jumping out of their seat for Lucky Bolden and for the Mighty Drunks, who are now back-to-back Stanley Keg champions. After a regular season championship going 10-2, Mighty Drunk go 3-0 in the Stanley Keg playoffs, including a 9-round shootout victory in the Frozen Four over the Bucks. So for your Mighty Drunks, it's now back-to-back Stanley Kegs. For some of the players on the team, including Captain Colby Collier and the other assistant captain, Brandon Adams, and Dustin Poole, many Stanley Kegs have now been won amongst the leadership group of the Mighty Drunks. Congratulations, Colby Collier, and thank you so much for everything you do to help get us organized. And thank you so much also to Rebirth Sports. Last night, as we walk into the locker room for the Mighty Drunks for the Stanley Keg Final, what do we see? Brand new jerseys from Rebirth Sports. What an incredible company. What an incredible gesture, and what an incredible look for the Mighty Drunks last night on the ice. Look good, feel good, play good, and that's exactly what the Drunks did as they converted back-to-back Stanley Keg Championships. I am your host and assistant captain, Crazy Charlie Saulnier, number 89 in your program, but I got on the score sheet last night. Congrats, Colby Collier, and each and every one of the Mighty Drunks out there, including the Bellevue team led by Justin Bradford and Jeremy Kegover, also Stanley Keg Champions just last week. This has been Mighty Drunks Radio. We now turn you back over to the Renegades of Puck.
A
hockey players are as unique as the game itself, and your uniform should be tailored to fit you. Rebirth Sports is your sports apparel tailor. From shells, bags, warm-ups, hats, hoodies, branding, and more, let Rebirth Sports be your custom hockey tailor.
And don't forget to tell them they do more than just hockey.
Rebirth Sports on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Rebirth Sports and Predneck Nation, a match made in hockey.
I'm Eustace Aros of the Nashville Predators, and you're listening to the Renegades of Puck with Crazy Charlie on Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back in, Redneck Nation Radio. Who was that host before the break with that takeover with all that energy and enthusiasm talking about Rec League, Beer League hockey? Congratulations, Colby Collier and the Mighty Drunks of the Lower Sea League in Antioch. 7-4 victory last night. Back-to-back Stanley Keg Championships. Also won the division this season in the regular year and were the number one seed overall. So congrats again. Stick taps to the Mighty Drunks. Very proud to be part of that organization. I've now been a part of 6 Stanley Keg Championships in 6 years since I first joined that team, and I am so incredibly proud to represent those colors and to represent that organization and to be a part of everything that we have been a part of, from skating in the U.S. Pond Hockey Championships up on Lake Nokomis in Minnesota to being represented on virtually every network. We've been featured on NHL Network. As a matter of fact, we had one of our Stanley Keg winning goals by Showtime Eric Young featured on NHL Network a couple of seasons ago. We've been on NBC's Hockey Day in America and virtually anywhere. The Mighty Drunks getting the job done out there and delivering the goods, just like the Renegades of Puck do each and every day right here on Nashville Sports Radio. If it's 5 o'clock on your clock, the Renegades of Puck are on the radio here at Nashville Sports Radio. I'm your host and Captain Crazy Charlie Saunier. Mastrodamus is here on the F&M Bank phone line to talk to me about all things Nashville Predators hockey. You can find him on Twitter at GreekGoalie35. Mosh, how are you doing today, my friend?
Charlie, feels good to be talking to NHL Preds hockey, even on their off days.
The people demanded it. Monday through Friday hockey coverage, it's the topic that they want to hear about. They're already sick of hearing about this NFL schedule release, whatever that is, that they've been hyping up for 3 days, and that they'll spend 7 days breaking down, if not the rest of the summer. They want to hear about the Nashville Predators. They want to hear about what's going on. So, without delay, let's get into that conversation. Mosh, of course, UC Saros bringing us back from break. You heard me lay it out in the first part of Predneck Nation Radio here. If it wasn't for his performance, this Nashville Predators team looks dramatically different. We're headed into a 5-year rebuild from the beginning of the season and the slow start to possibly being a Vezina finalist. Mastrodamus, I'll give you the numbers, then you take me through the season that was UC Saros. 36 games skated, 21-11-1 record, a 2.28 goals against average, a .927 save percentage. Mastrodamus, talk to me about the starting goaltender of the Nashville Predators.
He should be a Vezina Trophy finalist. Yes, you take away those first 3 weeks of the season, and it's a different ball game as far as the Vezina Trophy goes. If he doesn't have that, I think he's a runaway winner for the Vezina Trophy. .945 save percentage, Charlie, is not something you hear over an extended period of time. You might hear it over a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks of the season. Goaltender gets hot, and it just seems like the puck is a beach ball and just doesn't get by him. To do that over a period of 3 months, as UC Saros has done, is quite frankly unbelievable that that could even come out of my mouth right now. That .945 save percentage is just, you don't hear it. So he'll get some Vezina Trophy qualifications in there, clearly. He's not going to win the Hart Trophy, but I guarantee you, you will see his name on there down the ballot of the Hart Trophy for MVP. Yes, it's Connor McDavid. We all know it's going to be Connor McDavid. He's got over 100 points, and rightfully so. But if you want to talk about value to a team, this Predators team is nowhere near a playoff spot right now. If it wasn't for UC Saros literally carrying his team on his back, this is not a goaltender who sits back and faces 20 to 25 shot on a regular game and coasts by, giving up 2 goals, as his stats would indicate to you. He gives up 2 goals per game facing 35 shots, 40 shots. Hell, I don't know. How many times did he give up 20 shots in one period over the last month of the season? So his play has been absolutely ridiculous. And, of course, the very reason the Preds were still talking right now about this team playing in the first round against Carolina.
Mosh, of course, let's talk about Pekka Rinne. He came through huge for this team during the season. When UC Saros was out for a stretch, he really stepped up as a leader and a veteran, and he handled the business out there, helping the Nashville Predators course correct on this season. At the end of this season, he finishes with 24 games skated, a record of 10-12-1, goes against a 2.84 and a save percentage of .907, and we all know, because we've talked about it extensively, what happened just the other night and how special that was. Mosh, take me back and take me through the season that was for Pekka Rinne.
huge for Rene when Saros went down with injury, for Rene to go in there and play the way he did, keep the team afloat until Saros came back. Rene had won the starting job for a little while during the season back in February. He had gotten several consecutive starts because of his play when Saros was still struggling. So he kind of took the reins, went with it for a while, had a bad game against Detroit, and then after that, basically, Saros took over. Pecorine, especially here lately when the team needed it the most, only gave up 8 goals over his last 5 starts. You will take that every day of the week, 4-1 in those starts. Only loss was against Tampa Bay, and only gave up 2 goals. The leadership behind the scenes that we don't see, and you saw it on display a little bit out there on Monday night after the game, how much this team absolutely loves Pecorine. For somebody like Brad Richardson, who's only been with the team this season, to instruct Rene to take a lap, that tells you the respect he has amongst his peers in that locker room.
And no matter what, you're going to have 2 goaltenders in the playoffs if you're going to make any type of significant run. And right now, both of them playing at a good and elevated and high level to wrap up the regular season. Mosh, let's go out to the forward grouping real quick. Now, when I tell you the team finished 21st in goals for on the season at 2.70, you already know it was a subpar season from the forward grouping. At forward didn't even finish as the team leader in scoring. Philip Forsberg finishes second on the team in scoring. 12 goals and 20 assists, 32 points. Cali Yarncroke second amongst forwards with 28 points. Then Granlund at 27, Arvidsson at 25. Tolvanen, of course, I'm not going to get on him too hard, coming up and making a significant impact in this season, but at 22. Johansson at 22, and of course, it just keeps getting worse from there. Mastrodamus, overall, it was a pretty underperforming, underwhelming year, especially on the offensive side of things from the forward grouping. But as of late, to end the season at least, they seem to have developed a chemistry and an identity, and those are the most important things moving forward. But let's go back and recap what was overall a fairly underwhelming season by the Nashville Predators forward core.
It certainly reminds me a lot more, especially over the last 2 months when this team has played much better. It reminds me a lot more of the Barry Trotz era, with the team was pulling together anybody you could think of off the streets to throw out on the ice and contribute offensively. You have 7 guys with double-digit goals, none of them named Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene, I might add. You have a guy like Mikael Granlund, who didn't seem like he was going to come back, and as the offseason kept going on, nobody signed him, and sure, why not? Let's come back for one more season. He's up there with Cali Yarncroke, of all people, leading your team in goals for the season. Cali Yarncroke, the way he's played, and he got the night off on Monday night for good reason, plays a ton of minutes, as does Mikael Granlund. As far as having anybody that's a top-notch goal scorer, or anybody that's going to lead a league in points or anything like that, no forward on this team was amongst the top 140 players in the NHL as far as points goes. That tells you how far down the line that is, but they have a lot of depth guys that can go in there and can score in a pinch. Kind of, as you know, of course, that fourth line has created an identity on this roster that has trickled down. Guys like Colton Sissons, who seem to have found a spot on that fourth line where we thought, is he going to be a second-line center? Is he a third-line center? Nope, he's fitting very nicely there. Rocco Grimaldi has 10 goals this season, and he's been healthy scratch for the most part over the last month. So how do you bench him as well? So there's a lot of depth guys on this roster. So as far as if a guy gets hurt, it's not going to kill you that much because you have other guys that can step in, next man up, and fill in on whatever line that needs filling.
Just taking a quick look at the D-core from this year, it's basically like the divide line was essentially when Borowiecki went out of the lineup and remained out of the lineup. Mosh, I wanted to like his story. I wanted to like him when he was brought in as a free agent. He was expected to be the third pair defenseman with Benning going into the season, and he was definitely bringing the physical presence early on, but he was bringing it in all the wrong ways. He was a penalty machine, and the D-core was just not very good for the first third of this season. But then things slowly started to turn around, and that was because we saw an infusion of youth. I don't believe anybody could have seen Carrier being a time on ice leader for the Nashville Predators D-core going into the season, but that's something that happened on several occasions. We also saw several other prospects on the D side get their opportunities to come up and get some games in, but we all know on the regular season for this Nashville Predators team, it's all about the captain, Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, Matthias Ekholm, and Dante Fabbro, the top four of this team. So Mastrodamus, critique the top four and talk about their regular season performances, and then also give me a couple of comments on the youth that you saw getting the opportunity to come up. And I guess, honestly, we should single out Benning because he turned his season around and has become a very, very solid stay-at-home defenseman for this Preds team over the last stretch of about 30 games now.
Roman Josi definitely got off to a slow start coming off his Norris Trophy win last season. Only 8 points in his first 17 games. Finished the season with 25 points in his last 31 games. That is much closer to the pace he put on last season when he nearly eclipsed the 70-point mark. He was absolutely fantastic the second half of the year. Mattias Ekholm, you know, plus 19 on this team. That's far and away the best plus-minus on the team. 23 points also contributed. When Josi was out, when Ellis was out, he stepped up and contributed offensively. I think he had 4 goals in 4 games at one point during the season as well. He just does absolutely everything. I still think he's the most well-rounded defenseman on this roster. Ryan Ellis, a little bit of a down season, also was plagued by injury as well. So you hope that he turns back to good form. But Matt Benning, of course, doesn't contribute a whole lot offensively. He's not supposed to. He's played 53 games, got 4 points. What he did defensively, once he was separated from Borowiecki, fantastic job by him. Usually logging about 20 minutes a night, which is something that he was not signed on to do. He's signed on to be a third pair guy, play 13, 14 minutes a night and not kill you out there. But he was very admirable defensively. But when you look at the youth, Faber, I still think he has time to grow. Definitely shown a lot of turnovers way too often in his own zone. I think that needs to improve. Alexander Carrier, if this is people's first look at him, he's a star in the making. I know we talked, Sammy Girard got traded and Seth Jones got traded. Alexander Carrier looks very much like a Sam Girard type player. He looks fantastic out there. A lot of offensive capabilities. And he showed that again when he had the opportunity when Josi and Ellis were out. So love what I'm seeing out of the youth and also some of the experience on that blue line.
One more topic to get to before I let you go, Mosh, to wrap up and recap the season for the Nashville Predators, and that's special teams. Again, another underwhelming part of this team overall for the season. So it's very difficult to sit here and talk about them in such a positive way as we have been the last couple of weeks. And they are in the playoffs and they will be facing the Carolina Hurricanes. But this regular season was not a very good season. It was a very tough season, especially when it comes to special teams. We all know what the Preds did in Dallas early in the season, set them behind the eight ball in the penalty kill. They finished by giving up 42 power play goals against. The power play finishes converting 28 out of 159 times. Other than that one stretch when Tolvanen and Forsberg and Josi were getting heated up on the power play was a total disappointment throughout this season. Mosh, just sum up what was the special teams of the Nashville Predators this year.
We talked about John Hines and what he's done with the way this team plays and their identity. Apparently it's going to take longer than an entire season to fix the power play and fix the penalty kill, because that was a complete disaster for the most part. Like you said, aside from a hot stretch for about a month, power play has not been very good this season. Something that they definitely need to improve on. And, of course, we've seen you can lose games by not contributing offensively in the playoffs. I remember a series where the Predators lost to Chicago in a six-game playoff round in round one. They were scoreless on the power play. Dallas a couple seasons ago, they were scoreless on the power play and losing in six games as well. So that can kill you. You can't necessarily win games all the time with a power play, but you can certainly lose them when you don't take care of those chances that are presented to you. Penalty kill, of course, all season long near the bottom of the league. They've gotten a little bit better, at least, as the season has worn on, but still giving up way too many power play goals against. And against somebody like Carolina, bad recipe for disaster when you give them power play chances, especially come playoff time.
Mostradamus will start breaking down and previewing game one of the Nashville Predators versus the Carolina Hurricanes and everything about that first round best of seven playoff series starting tomorrow. But for today, I thank you for going back, giving me your thoughts, your summaries, and your recaps of everything that was for the Nashville Predators in this 56-game shortened season. The people can find you on Twitter at GreekGoalie35, where they can listen to you on this radio show all season long in the second period. From the F&M Bank phone line, Mostradamus jumped in the trenches with me today here on Predneck Nation Radio. Thank you so much, my friend.
Charlie, anytime. We'll do it again tomorrow, brother.
Catch him on Twitter at GreekGoalie35. Very good follow. Always up for the interaction. Sean C. Smith, also always up for the interaction from ontheforecheck.com. He's coming up next right here on Predneck Nation Radio on Nashville Sports Radio. I'm your host and captain, Crazy Charlie Sonny, and I am facilitating the offense from all angles right here on Predneck Nation Radio on Nashville Sports Radio. You are in the trenches with the Renegades of Puck.
I'm Roman Josi of Nashville Predators. You're listening to the Renegades of Puck with Crazy Charlie on Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back in Predneck Nation Radio right here on Nashville Sports Radio in the trenches with the Renegades Puck. I'm your host and captain, Crazy Charlie. Sonny, you heard from Mostradamus. You've also heard a takeover of a takeover. Now it's time to get back in the trenches from ontheforecheck.com. Sean C. Smith joins me. You can follow him on Twitter at SCSOTF, or you can join him on this radio show in the third period all season long. Remember, if it's 5 o'clock on your clock, the Renegades of Puck are on the radio right here on Nashville Sports Radio. Roman Josi brings us back from break. 48 games skated for the captain of the Nashville Predators, and he led the team in scoring over this season with 33 points. The breakdown, 8 goals and 25 assists. One of those 8 goals comes on the power play. 13 of those 25 assists comes on the power play. So 14 of the 33 overall points for the captain of the Nashville Predators came on the power play. He averaged 24 20 in time on ice, and picked up a total of 20 penalty minutes on the entire season. Also did suffer one minor injury, but since coming back, has been absolutely just fine and is ready to lead his team into the first round of the NHL playoffs against the Carolina Hurricanes. Sean C. Smith is here to talk to me about all things that happened with the Nashville Predators this season. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Charlie, and I'm fired up and ready to go.
Sean, let me just feed you this one, and then you start going, and we'll see where the conversation takes us from there. Let's go back to before this season even began. There was a promise of a youth movement. We saw that, but not exactly the way we had anticipated. Start talking right there, and let's see where we go.
Yeah, after the postseason ended abruptly when the Predators lost to the Arizona Coyotes, David Poile, in his final media availability of last season, commented that there would be a youth movement, that a lot of guys from Milwaukee would be getting a chance in Nashville. He mentioned Ellie Tolvanen, Rem Pitlick, and Phil Tomasino, and a host of other prospects, and even went as far in that availability to give some odds on re-signing some players that were entering free agency. And things, for the most part, didn't look too good. Next up, of course, was the draft, and the biggest thing to come out of the amateur draft, aside from drafting dynamic Russian goaltender Yaroslav Askarov and the acquisition of an entire pack of Lukes, was a trade that sent KG veteran Nick Bonino to Minnesota in exchange for a young forward named Luke Cunning. The trade seemed to jibe well with Poile's youth movement comments as it sent off a veteran and replaced him with an up-and-coming player with grit and a lot of offensive upside. And it wasn't long before the free agency period started, and things got a little crazy. First, Craig Smith was allowed to walk away from the team to sign with the Boston Bruins on a deal that seemed reasonably affordable and team-friendly. Colin Blackwell went to the Rangers for about the same as an entry-level contract. Mikhail Granlund chose not to re-sign with the Predators nor any other team. And, of course, the Predators bought out Kyle Turris, who was picked up by the Edmonton Oilers. The team also managed to add several players who were, surprisingly, veterans. Matt Benning came from Edmonton, Mark Borowiecki came from Ottawa, Brad Richardson came from Arizona, and Nick Cousins came from Vegas. For everyone following along at home, we all thought that most of those empty spots on the roster that were going to be filled by the youth were now being filled by veterans.
Sean, no doubt this was a very different type of season. We did not get to see any of the normal type of calendar that the NHL usually has, including a shortened 56-game schedule. So that kind of shifted things in the way things were going to go into training camp. It also introduced to us the new concept of the taxi squad. So talk about those concepts and take it from there.
Yeah, the biggest surprise going into training camp was, I'd say, the last-minute signing of Mikhail Granlund to a one-year contract. And, of course, this came in close conjunction with the signing of Granlund's fellow Finn and friend Eric Halla, which pretty much sealed the fate of the youth movement before it ever began. Training camp was quick, concise, and heavily limited by COVID protocols, as the team only spent time together unmasked when they were on the ice and were relegated to meeting remotely or in very small groups off the ice. And, of course, this is a period where you saw the lineup kind of get cemented into place, as well as some determinations as to who would be on the taxi squad, which, as the year went on, became a very dynamic thing with players moving back and forth freely as opposed to a set group of guys being there and ready to go at any time. And despite a quick and dramatic win against the Columbus Blue Jackets to start the season, things started going downhill fairly quickly. A string of poor goaltending performances from UC Saros, like both you and Mosh mentioned already. And Saros was intended to be the starting goaltender on any given night. Combine that with a power play and a penalty kill that couldn't seem to get right, despite having all the key pieces in place, had the team in a very, very bad spot early on. The team had initially been projected to have a chance at finishing anywhere between second and seventh in the Central Division, and the early reports were trending toward the bottom of the division instead of the top. There were calls for the firing of John Hines, calls for the firing of David Poile, and the majority of the team was rumored to be on the trade block. I was even on hand for a very ugly loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning that resulted in players and a players-only closed-door meeting. On-ice performance wasn't the only issue the team was going to have to worry about for very long, because that's when the injuries started. UC Saros took an elbow to the head from Nino Niederreiter, Roman Josi got boarded by the Dallas Stars, and then more players started dropping like flies. By the end of it, Philip Forsberg, Ellie Tolvanen, Matt Duchene, Brad Richardson, Ryan Nellis, Matthias Ekholm, Dante Fabbro, and even more players fell victim to injury. It seemed like every night ended with another player leaving the ice early. And in the rare events that there were no obvious injuries, the IR list still wound up one name longer the next morning. But this led to a well-traveled highway between the AHL,
the taxi squad, and the National Predators roster that saw a considerable number of rookies coming into the lineup and making an impact.
The eight-game road trip at the middle of this schedule, the middle point of the season, could have easily broken this team, and we could have been looking at a rebuild for the next 3 to 5 years and some very unfamiliar names on the ice to wrap up the season for the Nashville Predators. But that road trip, Sean, that thing ended up causing a bit of magic for this franchise. Keep going with that.
Yeah, and in the middle of all those issues, that's when the team did embark on what we know is the longest road trip in franchise history, 8 games, 14 days. And while an extensive road trip in the middle of a pandemic with a team facing what seemed to be an insurmountable pile of injuries adding up may not seem like a breeding ground for success, the Predators did manage to go 4-3-1 on the trip and would reflect back on the experience as a turning point in the season for the team. John Hines has been stressing from the beginning of the season, even from the beginning of his tenure with the Predators last season, the importance of the team's ability to deal with adversity. And this road trip was special because amidst the preseason protocols, the team hadn't had a chance to really gel or build a strong sense of camaraderie. This road trip gave them a chance to bond, and that bond was a necessity for the team to begin leaning into its identity as a team that doesn't just play with each other, but a team that plays for each other. And that was the first step to the team starting to click the way they needed to in order to right their season. And one of the biggest parts of that resurgence was the power play, adding the dynamic wrist shot of Ellie Tolvanen across the ice from a guy that's dangerous anytime he's on the ice, Philip Forsberg. But this period also saw the emergence of the fourth line, a line we have talked about extensively on this show. Centered by Colton Sissons with Yakov Trenin and Matthew Olivier on the wings, before Olivier was injured and had his role filled perfectly by Tanner Jeannot, this line, which we call the Stampede line on the show, played with an intensity that allowed them to set the pace and tone for each game and quickly became known for their style of play. But it wasn't long before their approach to the game became the identity for this entire team. And at this point in the season, we knew who the team was and how they played. But more importantly, the team knew who they were. And with that identity in place, the team went into a mode where they had their eyes on the playoffs. And as veterans came back from injury, they saw what was happening with the youth, and they were excited to jump back in. The team began playing like their postseason life depended on it, and realistically, their postseason life did depend on winning every game. David Poile doubled down on this team at the trade deadline, choosing only to add Eric Goodbranson for a little bit of defensive depth, and that bet paid off as the team that outworks everybody now finds itself in the final playoff spot in their division and set to do battle the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round.
Outstanding wrap-up of the season that was for the Nashville Predators. I look forward to talking to you about the first round and previewing Game 1 starting tomorrow right here in the trenches. He's Sean C. Smith from OnTheForeCheck.com. You can find him at SCSOTF, and he joined me on the F&M Bank phone line. Sean, appreciate you joining us so much today. We're going to get to Brian Bassin here from the Renegade Analytics Desk. We've got to get his one big stat. You've heard from Sean, you've heard from Mosh, and you've been hearing from me the entire episode, facilitating the offense from every angle. You're listening to Predneck Nation Radio right here on Nashville Sports Radio. You are in the trenches with the Renegades of Puck.
I'm Ren Pillick of the Nashville Predators, and you are listening to the Renegades of Puck with Crazy Charlie on Nashville Sports Radio.
Sean C. Smith from OnTheForeCheck.com just did a great job talking about the youth of this Nashville Predators team, so no better way to bring us back from break than with one of those prospects. Ren Pillick getting a couple of games in this season. Highly impressed with what I see out of him. I'm your host and captain, Crazy Charlie Saunier, here to talk to me about one big stat from the Renegade Analytics Desk here on Predneck Nation Radio. On the F&M Bank phone line, he is, of course, from OnTheForeCheck.com. He's got the charts you need to see and the numbers you need to know. He is Brian Bassin. How are you today, Brian?
I'm doing great. Let's see if we can get this thing finished off in regulation, unlike yesterday with me. So today I've got multiple stats. So, and we're going to rename this a little bit because I've been trying this season to balance out just the hard numbers and some things that people can put their finger on and can see in the eye test. But today is going to be one big nerd because I'm going to give you a bunch of really good fancy stats, as folks call them. So let's go through this real fast. First, let's talk about Victor Arvidsson. You know, the season may have been a little bit unremarkable to the naked eye. It's something that you think, you know, his habit of developing that I'm going to rush into the offensive zone and then stop at the top of the circles and take a shot was pretty, you know, annoying at times. I think he passed up a lot of scoring chances that he could have created something a little bit better with that. But this may have been his most his best well-rounded season. In fact, he had probably one of his best defensive seasons this season, and for a long time, he was the defensive leader in goals above replacement, a stat that's tracked by evolvinghockey.com, which is something everybody should be checking out. And so I did want to point out that he had an excellent season. In fact, he was generating offense so well, he led the team in high-danger shot assists per 60. So thinking about shot assists, that's just if you assigned assists to every single shot, not just goals, that's where Victor Arvidsson led that team. And that's something that is tracked by Corey Snajder at Shutdown Line on Twitter, another person who is invaluable, doing hand tracking of every single team, 20 to 30 games every season by himself. Make sure you're checking him out. All right, advertisement over. Let's talk another bit about Matt Duchene. He was third on the team with 12 penalties drawn, but he had the best penalty differential on the team, +9, only took three penalties this entire season. He also led the entire team by a pretty significant margin in zone entries with possession and zone entries that led to a scoring chance. He was one of the best at creating that offense. He averaged 14 shots per 60 minutes, but he was well balanced, and he actually had 14 primary shot assists per 60 minutes as well, again leading the team in there. We can talk, of course, about, you know, what some people might argue as the team, one of the team MVPs was Philip Forsberg. Of course, he finished second on the team in points and second on the team in goals, despite playing eight or more games less than the rest of the top eight on the team. One of the things that he did, he improved this season on, was that his expected unblocked shooting percentage was 6.1%. His actual unblocked shooting percentage was about 6.8. So not only was he creating quality shots, but he was following up and scoring on those shots that he was creating and adding a little bit of that finishing touch on there that makes him Philip Forsberg, where he creates a goal out of nothing, seemingly. Let's go through and talk about UC Saros real fast. Again, he finished fourth in the league with goals saved above expected, and fourth in goals above replacement. And I think we would be having a whole lot more conversations about him actually being a Vezina winner, because he was actually the fourth worst in the league on the penalty kill, something for him to focus on. If he'd have finished just a little bit better or even just, you know, hit zero and evened out there, he would definitely be probably the winner of the Vezina Trophy. And speaking of winning Vezina trophies, UC Saros had a season save percentage of 92.7%, which is exactly the same save percentage as Pekka the year he won the Vezina Trophy. Well, let's look at, speaking of goals above replacement, let's look at the leaders in those for those. The offensive even strength player of this season for the Nashville Predators. If I told you that we have a defenseman that led the team in offensive production and was about average, right at league average in defense, you would think, well, that might be Roman Josi. No, sir, not this season. Mattias Ekholm is that man. The man had the highest even strength offensive goals above replacement score at 8.8, which is frankly incredible, you know, thinking of Mattias Ekholm just 2 years ago. But he led the team there on offensive even strength. Defensive even strength, Carrier and Fabbro actually tied to have the best defensive rating at even strength at 2.6. The top forwards, you know, the guys that you think of as grit guys, there's your forwards like Cal Yarncroke, Jakob Trenin, and Colton Sissons, and then that rookie that everybody said was going to be just all offense and nothing else, Eli Tolvanen finished sixth on the team in even strength defense with 1.2 goals above replacement. That is frankly incredible for a player that we all thought was just be an Alex Ovechkin type sniper. He led the team in the power play offense, and then somehow, something I had to check three times, shorthanded defense, the best player on the penalty kill was Ben Harper, and I have no clue how.